SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Absolutely glorious Friday fall weekend, mid-month, or I guess it's actually 3 weeks in, so it's a little past mid-month. But one thing we can tell you definitively, 2 weeks from today, yes, you're exactly 2 weeks away, and Breeders' Cup 2018. It'll be Future Stars Friday, 2 weeks from today. It's kind of scary, actually. Just sort of putting it all together here, and I should recognize that. Yeah, you know, whenever the season hits this weekend and we go to Far Hills, we always will be heading to Breeders' Cup, you know, the end of that next week. So a week from today, we'll head to the Ville after the show, and we'll bring you Breeders' Cup from the 29th through to Future Star Friday. Meanwhile, it's, I suppose we could call it, what should we call the weekend? The state bread special, I guess, partly anyway. Because tonight at Remington, the Oklahoma Classics, really nice card. And then the same thing happens in New York and in Maryland tomorrow. We'll talk to everybody that can contribute on these fronts. Mary Rampolini, later on this morning. In hour three, let me look at my list so I've got it accurate. Mary will join us in hour three. And in addition to looking at Remington, we'll talk to Mary about her division of the Breeders' Cup. It's the Dirt Mile. Three conversations today, actually at least three and a half, because we talk to Marty every week, and Marty updates you on the filly and mare sprint. But today, Mary Rampolini on the Dirt Mile and on the Oklahoma Classics. Jim Dunleavy in hour two. Jim, of course, ready for Maryland Million Day at Laurel. Monster card. And his division is the Turf Sprint. And it's an unwieldy division. It got horses from all over the place, including some that are that are still competing. There's actually, you know, fold in the action at Ascot in the Kipco Champions Day tomorrow, and we'll try to touch at least, you know, skirt that a little bit, probably in hour three. You fold in what's happening there, and then a couple of horses, like for instance, Highway Star, who's going to run tomorrow at Belmont, and she could turn around for the filly and mare sprint. So there are domestic horses. There's also Richard's Boy, who is looking to parlay the California Flag race into the Turf Sprint. So there's still plenty of intrigue yet to come, and horses that have to get through the, particularly Champions Day, and when it comes to the international set. And Steve Anderson, I've been dogging Steve. He I've been harassing him. Last week he was home visiting family in Illinois, and he literally, him and Grenig, there's really no correspondence that are beating the bushes harder and longer and more than than Grenig and Anderson. And Steve will join us probably the last segment, probably around 11:40, 11:45 Eastern. And we'll get some Santa Anita news. But the turf and the Juvenile Phillies turf, those are the Steve Anderson Breeders' Cup divisions. So we'll get field glances in both and updates from Steve Anderson on that. And he's always internationally plugged in. He loves jumpers. I'm sure he'll be looking forward to betting the seven races at Far Hills. And keeps a very close tab, he and Marcus Hirsch, on the international front. So that's today's DRF visits. Marty, too, after this first break this morning. And I think we're pretty much up on the Philly and Mare Sprint because we talk to Marty every week. But the Keeneland action with Marty, which we'll get to also momentarily, because yesterday was okay. Ended up quite nice. The other visits, Nick Tamaro. Nick will be here. We'll talk the New York Showcase. Feels like there's a lot of logical horses, but there's a couple of spots, particularly that filly, the Maid of the Mist. The filly two-year-old race is, I don't know, there's six, seven, eight horses out of there of those two-year-old fillies. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we go right back to that Finger Lakes runner that we liked, Cartwheel and Lulu. Maybe we go right back to her because there's a chance that she might control the pace up front. That's the one thing I could grab. We did well with her in the Joe Gima and a month ago. So we'll see if we can't maybe get Cartwheel and Lulu. We'll get half of what we had. We had 7-1 in the Gima and 7-2 on the morning line in the Maid of the Mist. The Sleepy Hollow for the two-year-old boys. Very well could be Ravelli, who, of course, we talked about. And it looks like Ravelli, I don't sense that he's got other plans beyond. You know, he was kind of playing around with the two horses we discussed, with Dugout and with Big Drink of Water. But Dugout turns out for the Sleepy Hollow and is the favorite. So we'll see what Nick thinks. And you got a terrific, the Empire Classic came up, absolutely tremendous, 11 of them. And pat on the back might be your slight favorite, your slight choice, but Control Group, can you dig it? Gary's got hit it once more. Christophe Clement trying the three-year-old, Seafoam in there. Kimmel's actually, Mr. Buff, 12-1. It's a really good edition of the Classic. It's, as always, a fun betting card, and we'll talk to Nick and get some opinions. And I let him know about yesterday's call, DJ's question from Kentucky. DJ asking about, you know, how Nick bets those middle price long shots. And you know, I suggested that, you know, his trifecta strategy, which he utilizes for live money contests and has done very well with at places like the BCBC. But we'll let Nick riff on that. Scully today, later on, looks like 10:45. We'll get some opinions from James Scully. And Sean Clancy, through the magic of digital tape, because we had a conversation yesterday late afternoon with Sean. He's on a plane today and unavailable from 9:15 to, he said, I leave at 9:15, I get in at 11:20. I said, let's tape something. So we'll talk Far Hills one more time with Clancy, and he'll talk about his own history. It's a lot of fun, and we'll hear Clancy in hour two, and I think you'll enjoy it. He tells one very funny story that I will alert you to. So there you go, a busy weekend preview. Lots of good action. And the action today, of course, includes the Stronach 5. Gulfstream Park West. Things starts off with the 7th. $50,000 maiden claimer. And post time for that. And the sequence, 4:36, gets things going. Gulfstream West, 7th, Santa Anita. 3rd, the Laurel, 10th. Back to Miami Gardens for the 8th. And then the Golden Gate, 5th. Which is a mile on the grass, an allowance for fillies and mares. This sequence, you know, if very nice in terms of the quality assembled. State bred fillies, 2-year-olds for 50, Florida. Open maiden 30, going a mile on the dirt at Santa Anita. A money allowance at Laurel, a mile on the grass. A $35,000 optional claimer, conditional allowance, mile and a 16th on the grass. And then a straight first level allowance with a $27,000 purse going a mile on the grass at Golden Gate. I mean, in terms top to bottom, these five races, this is the highest quality set of races, you know, for those that, you know, that find, you know, some of those lower level races just a little off-putting. No such qualm on this set of races. We'll talk with Marty next, but a couple of quick result notes from yesterday at Keeneland. And boy, I sure hope that John from New York, I hope that his concern over the Clocker report, that it wasn't glowing enough on Gold Credit, I hope that didn't put him off from making a bet. Didn't stop me. So thanks to John, 3-1, we got $8 on Gold Credit and looked good doing it. That was 7/8, which is always taxing. Golden Sense, leading freshman sire. Another winner. I think I saw, what, his 22nd? So I got a big kick out of that. Good job to Gary Young picking out Gold Credit. Wins at first asking. Nacho Correas. Ben Colebrook with two wins yesterday. K-Choice, another Kentucky Racing Association product. Not a product. This is a Ramsey bred, a flatter, but a horse bred by the Ramseys. And maiden breaker going 6.5. And then later, the nightcap went to Colebrook. Ben's out of control. And in fact, I think I saw that he was the trainer talk subject on HRRN. And then the stake. Let's talk about the stake as we go out. Zulu Alpha. This was a absolute bonanza. And I hope you came aboard. Another high price claim by Michael Wee. This time with John Ortiz. Ortiz's first graded stake win as a trainer. And of course, worked with Kellen Gorder and Barkley Tagg. 7-1, paid $16.20 in Keeta. Great set of exotics. Marty McGee kicks it off next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, Road St. Matthews. Tell them Tom. By the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
One, two, three, and I come with the redneck staff. Cause you know I'm getting paid by the mile. I hate this, I pave this, but I save this. Everybody smiles, and act gracious. See, I rob banks, I pull cranks. Sometimes I eat franks and conditions. Best wishes, I'm vicious. But here I am again like CNN. Deliver these mic flips. Stick them up.
We're back. A little past 15, and just got some confirmation that we will talk the Champions Day, not just with Steve Anderson, but with Nick Luck. Nick will join us at the top of hour three, give or take, and I appreciate that. Getting a little, you know, we'll just get some ramification considerations, see what Nick's thoughts are and what the latest is on the potential participants coming out. You know, obviously, they got a run tomorrow morning. Races basically, they must start about 9:30 till I think the last, I think the Queen Elizabeth, which is the fifth, it must go off at about 11. We'll get that in detail. And just now, and as Marty McGee joins us, we can tell you Thunder Snow with a long extended work. And thanks to John Nichols, coming from the clocker stand, 14-1, 26-3, 39-3, 51-4 for a half, 104-1 for 5A. So he went 6 furlongs in 116-4. And out a mile, 142-1, and then out even more, 156-4. So it's kind of almost a 2 minute lick workout, but Thunder Snow, who apparently is thriving at Churchill Downs, Marty McGee is thriving, and we're just less than two weeks away from so many people descending on Louisville, and there's so many things to look forward to. None more than Marty receiving the Walter Haight Award. That's why everybody's really coming in.
Come on, Vic. Maybe 50 people at that dinner. Yeah, honestly, it's going to be quite an honor. I've got like a lot of my family's going to be there, some friends in from out of town, and it's going to be a big deal for me. So I appreciate it.
It should be fun. And the Joe Palmer Award to Jimmy Gluckson, and the Jim McKay Award to Donna Barton Brothers, and Mike Smith gets the centerpiece portion, and the Mr. Fitz Award, typifying the spirit of racing. And it's going to be at the Whiskey Dry, which what do we know about that joint?
Well, Edward Lee, who is a famed chef in Louisville, locally famous. I don't know how regionally or internationally or nationally famous he is, but he's had quite a few good restaurants in Louisville. 610 Magnolia Lane. 610 Magnolia.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, he started it, and it's gotten some great reviews. So I'm going to go check it out. I think this weekend I'm going to the Keith Urban concert, unless Milwaukee makes it to game 7 tomorrow night. Then I'm going to have a real... I'm going to have a fight on my hands, Vic. I've got quite a few futures on the brew crew.
Ooh. Well, I'm rooting with you too. This might come as disconcerting to the Dodger fans that are getting excited, but either way, the Red Sox are waiting for either one, and either matchup would be pretty nice, actually.
Oh, it's going to be great. You know, I bet on the Brewers in March over 84.5 games, and so after they did so well, I figured we'll. Like in mid-September, I got 15-1 on them winning the World Series, and I've got 5-1 on them winning this playoff series. So yeah, I'm interested.
You're committed. I love it. Well, you're also committed to everything going on at Keeneland. And yesterday, Marty, really enjoyed. You know, I kind of got signed on a little bit yesterday, and we talked about. A couple of races on the show leading in, and that included even the maiden race that Gold Credit won for Nacho Correas and Michael House. That's a horse Gary Young bought Gold Credit.
I noticed that you tweeted that out.
Absolutely.
Now, was that the third, the fourth race? My brother was in that race. The horse ran real big for Samantha. I'm trying to think of who it was.
Blunt Force.
Yeah, ran a big race.
Only at 20-1.
Yeah, 19-1.
Yep. Yep. And got beat too.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, got beat two lengths. Ran great.
Yeah. So you know what? There's so many good maiden and allowance and race. It just seems like was racing this good 20 years ago. I don't know. It just seems like every day we've got these well-bred maidens who are putting on shows here, and you know it'll happen on opening day of Churchill on the 28th with the Stars of Tomorrow. It just seems like here in Kentucky for a lot of the year, not necessarily December, January, February, March, but 8 months out of the year, even at Ellis Park and of course at Kentucky Downs and both the big meets or both the big tracks, Churchill and Keeneland, seems like you have just a veritable plethora of these good maidens who all have pedigrees and ability, and you've got, you know, a dozen or more barns where you just come to expect the Brad Coxes and the Steve Asmussens and the Brett Calhouns and Dale and everybody else. Seems like they've all got these really nicely bred maidens, and I can't remember it being like that a number of years ago.
Well, we talked to Rusty Arnold the other day about Concrete Rose the Jessamine performance, and Ben Colebrook got two more two-year-old winners yesterday. Actually, those were older horses. Those weren't two-year-olds, but he did have the two maiden wins yesterday, the Nightcap and the Korean, the KRA horse. And then there was the stake win. And the Sycamore, what a storyline. Michael Way, this is at least the third horse I can think of graded stake winner from a high price claim, and We has made it a habit, Marty, 62.5 to 80,000. I think he's even reached in for 100,000. Those are typically with Mike Maker, and the ones we thought about were Taglieb and Hoagie. And now he's got another one, and it provided John Ortiz, the former Kellen Gorder assistant, also worked for Barkley Tag, gets him his first graded stake win, and Zulu Alpha, I mean, good field, and one easy.
Yeah, it was a great field, I thought. You know, you had both the Maker horses who've done a whole lot in their careers, and then Arklow, I thought it was a brilliant move by Giroux to go on and kind of force everybody else's hands and rush up on the, it's kind of like a harness horse down the stretch the first time on a half mile track. You know, it just kind of got his horse right into the race, and Arklow, I thought, ran a bang up race, but he just wasn't good enough. But I kind of thought that Zulu Alpha coming off that triple digit buyer in his previous race was a bounce candidate, but evidently not. A lot of credit to John Ortiz, as you said, and actually he's one of my next calls here this morning from here at Keeneland. Seeing, I'm sure he'll never forget yesterday. He was on TBG before the race, and he had his little boy interviewed after the race with him, and quite a memorable afternoon and his first graded stakes winner as a trainer.
If you caught on to this, this was a $120 triple with Arklow and Bigger Picture, who were, I mean, had to be on your tickets. The horse that ran kind of a blah race was Oscar Nominated. Any indication from Maker and Cox for Bigger Picture and Arklow in 2 weeks?
I haven't called them yet, but I'm pretty sure Brad is going to want to go.
That's what I thought.
You know, he ran big. The horse ran real big, and I guess he'll have to run against the Arc winner, right?
That's the way it looks.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about that this morning. That's, to me, the Breeders' Cup really came of age when Dancing Brave came back and came here in, like, 86, was it? Oh, at Santa Anita. To me, when you get the Arc winner, that's big stuff. So, anyway, I'm off topic here, but it just really gives the Breeders' Cup an international flair, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, we need it this year with the Triple Crown winner having retired. I think it's going to be quite possibly the biggest element to this whole Breeders' Cup is her coming.
Well, we also are going to get a number of them exiting the Champions Day card tomorrow at Ascot, and Nick Luck will talk about that in Hour 3. Marty, let's look at the weekend action and the nice parade of graded stakes, the Valley View today, the Raven Run, and then the Dowager. And starting today, another field, very much like yesterday's Sycamore, where, you know, there are logicals, and nobody would argue against the logical players, but there are some really inviting price plays in this Valley View field. Take us through.
Well, George Weaver thought he was dodging Chad Brown when he scratched Daddy is a Legend from the QE2 on Saturday. Of course, Chad won with an odds-on favorite, but now Chad's got a couple here with Reverse the Decision and Mighty Scarlet. It's a full field of 14. I haven't gotten the scratches yet, but there's no clear-cut favorite in here. I don't know if Daddy is a Legend will be favored or not. She's 7-2. I think that both the Chads will be less than the 8-1. That you're being pegged here in the Valley View. But a lot of other interesting candidates in here, Steve, including Poetic Charm for Godolphin on the outside with Mike Smith. My pick in here is Colonia for Grand Motion, the French bred filly, number 7 with Joe Bravo to ride. Number of others here in with a chance, including Good Things Take Time, Cool Bean for Brad Cox, Chipolata for Clement. I mean, it seems like this has been the rule and not the exception, these stakes here at Keeneland, particularly on the grass, coming up with just these terrific fields to bet into.
Well, that's interesting that you went to Colonia because I've got highlights around Siranusa. We talked to Joe Sharp when was it, last week? I'm losing track. I guess it was this week after Divine Mischief won. Yeah, it was on Monday, and we brought up Siriusa and 20-1 there. Wilkes has got High Tech 30-1. That's a silly price. And Good Things Take Time. George Abreu 12-1. That's another price that is inviting. I mean, this is fun. And you mentioned the 8-1s on Mighty Scarlet and Reverse the Decision. I think I like Mighty Scarlet a little better than Reverse the Decision. But 12-1 on Good Things Take Time. That may be where I key.
Yeah, go on with it. I mean, this is the kind of race if you're, and again on Fridays here, I think maybe not the last Friday, but on Fridays here they had the $200,000 pool guarantee in the late pick four, so that will be in effect today and sponsored by TVG. And you know, I think this is a kind of a spread race. You got to incrementalize when you get to this one.
Well, the stake goes at 5:30 today, and then the nightcap. I just want to point out a Gail Benson runner that makes a second start today for Al Stahl. That's locally owned, 7 furlongs. This is a $250,000 distorted humor colt bred by Stone Street out of the really nice 50 Shades of Hay, and was a good second at Churchill going six a month ago. That was behind Preamble and ahead of Bourbon Calling, locally owned, the focus, I'm guessing, in that nightcap.
You're most likely winner in the nightcap. And yet again, I see this is the second time we've got 5-2. We've got 5-2 co-favorites. I don't know. This Mike Battaglia started doing this. I don't know why, but yeah, he's got the 8 at 5-2, and he's got the 10 at 5-2. I just noticed that. So, yeah. Anyway.
All right. Let's go to Saturday, and there a quick couple of notes on maidens before we talk about the Raven Run, the third race, Mart. You got maiden two-year-old fillies going a mile a 16th on the turf. And I just want to alert, people may kind of gloss over some of the firsters. There's a firster in here that Brendan Walsh sends out, Grandaria. And right away, I didn't have to even look at the pedigree to know where this one came from. It's the family of Oatsy, of course, the Dam of Bagdaria. And Bagdaria had a foal by the name of Bag of Jewels that never made the races by AP Indy, and this is a filly out of Bag of Jewels by Curlin, and 12-1. Brendan Walsh isn't necessarily a guy that gets him cranked first time out, but I just want people to know this is, you know, Oatsy, one of the most important mares in modern breeding.
Well, I'll tell you, I am one generally to dismiss, as you would say, first-timers going long on the grass, because to me it just implies that the horse isn't fast enough to win going shorter or under other conditions. But boom, the other day, Steve Asmussen sent out a horse that was 12-1 on the morning line, and it won first time going long on the grass, and I tore up my tickets afterward. But I think usually you're pretty well off to go against that, but not always.
Well, this is a horse worth following. Oatsy, of course, the dam of her first good horse was Bagdaria. Then she came back with Lady Joni, and of course Shackleford. And she's still producing, although she hasn't been as productive with her recent foals, but she still is. She still is dropping them every spring, so keep an eye on this one.
Lady Joni, you're going back to the Carl Nassar era, aren't you?
Yeah, I absolutely am, and of course that was a unique achievement because Lady Joni gave Nassar one of those fun distinctions of winning the Alabama and the Travers the same year.
Yeah, and she also, her name was spelled as if it should have been pronounced Lady Joanne.
That's it. But those of us in the know know that it's Lady Joni. I love it. I love it. We love Carl Napsker. Talk about the Raven run, Marty. I think I found myself another 12-1 shot.
Oh, man. I mean, this Chad's in here, too, with Alter Moon, who ran a pretty good, I thought, fourth in the test. You know, the test is always kind of the benchmark for this division, this kind of race. I think the race goes through her. Amy's Challenge, I talked to Mac Robertson about whether or not the jockey, Jared Loveberry, will have to send her. He said not necessarily. I mean, she's pretty fast on her own. She's going to be coming off a layoff and a turf dash. So I imagine that they're all going to have to run down Amy's Challenge. After that, it's, if it all falls apart, maybe Kelly's Humor could come from way out of it and win it. Blamed, to me, is the real intrigue. I didn't have a chance to talk to Bill Mott about her, but evidently the owner went ahead and switched her off of the Joel Marr out west. She was supposed to run in the Oaks, but I remember she came up with a real minor injury, and that caused her to be laid up. And since then, Billy's had her up training at Saratoga. She's a very interesting candidate in this Raven run. Number of others in here, Divine Queen, Moonshine Memories, True Royalty for Sadler, and just a lot of different ways to go in the Raven run. Three-year-old fillies clearly with the Valley View and the Raven run. It's a big weekend for them here at Keeneland.
Well, you mentioned Sadler, and that's who I'm interested in. True Royalty, 12-1, gets Robbie Alborado for a run into the pace, and I like this, coming from a try down the hill, and so going turf to dirt and blistered 59-1, preparing for this. I think True Royalty's got a nice look in here at a price, so that's exactly the 12-1 that I had an interest in.
I mean, she blew doors in a pretty good running of the Grade 3 Torrey Pines, so that was kind of her breakthrough race, Steve, and then...
Yep.
Using the turf to dirt angle, I think, is always kind of not a bad way to go. So, obviously a lot of different angles to approach the Raven run from.
Well, and I guess 12-1s are the order of the day, because in the nightcap on Saturday, Danny Pites sends out a Shadwell homebred, Rodwan, who happens to be a half-sister to Farhan. The stake winner for Shadwell, who was by Jazzle, and she caught my eye. Don't know if she'll necessarily fire first out, but Danny Pites does pop with firsters here and there, and big fan of Danny Pites. And then on Sunday, we've got more maiden action, and we've got the Grade 3 Dowager, the female companion race to the Sycamore.
I'm a big fan of Pites, too, and Pites is a big fan of the Razorbacks.
He did, you know, I should send you that cut. I had him do the calling of the hogs when we were at Oakland.
I love it. He's a fun guy to kid around with.
Good guy.
Phillies and Mares, one more time here in the Sunday feature. I was just getting down to analyzing this pretty closely. I thought that the two California Phillies, Amboseli and Vexatious, had the edge. They seem like they have a little more... Distance qualifications. It might be a fast pace, D, with some of these other horses coming out of the mile and an eighth type of races, and they're going around three turns for the first time. So Daring Duchess and Viva Vegas both promise a fast pace, but I think I'm going to go with Vexatious on the outside for Neil Drysdale to bounce back off of. If she runs back to her two-back race, she's going to be tough.
Well, Marty, before we go as well, of course, you're tracking the Philly and Mare Sprint. When it comes to the Breeders' Cup divisions, any movement, any news to report since we talked last week?
Not really. I think all of these races, Steve, we're just kind of waiting to see what happens Monday. I think we at DRF are going to be privy to what actually happens in terms of the pre-entries, and after that we'll still have, 10 or 11 days till they run, and it'll be another week till they enter on Monday the 29th, yeah. So no major shakeups in mind. I know that Finley's Lucky Charm is out for work yesterday morning or Wednesday morning. And, you know, they're all getting in their penultimate works right now, and then we'll all get to see him either for the ones who actually ship in, probably the Saturday, Friday and Saturday before the Breeders' Cup at Churchill will be pretty active. So, yeah, the Philly Mare Sprint, I think it's going to be a big field. I really do. There's a number of guys who've expressed interest in running. So Baffert with the two favorites in Marley's Freedom and Dream Tree, and then all the rest.
Well, and as I mentioned, Highway Star runs this weekend in New York, and Rodrigo Abillo could maybe swing her back in. And, of course, Sky Diamond's off the win at Santa Anita, gets back to good stead, and nice, big, bulky field. Marley's Freedom, Selcourt, Dream Tree, Finley's Lucky Charm, Golden Mischief, Mia Mischief, Shallan, Sky Diamond, Stormy Empire, Embrace for Kathleen O'Connell, who's got, looks like, two horses in the Breeders' Cup, Union Strike, and then a number of possibilities, including Anonymity, Highway Star, Kirby's Penny, Lake Pontchartrain, Let It Ride Mom, Lewis Bay, Miss Sunset, and Marty McGee is your guy. Mart, I appreciate it. I will see you before I talk to you next.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Marty McGee, everybody. Got to jump right in. Nick Tamaro standing by, and Nick is on very short timing today. He's out on the road, and we'll say good morning to Nick Tamaro.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And coming off the trip to Keeneland and the contest, and, of course, Tommy Massis storms to the front.
I'll tell you, Tommy is the king of the quick strike. He can... You never know when he's going to pop up, and it's almost price irrelevant. So we saw a 19-1 winner of the fourth on Sunday, and that was going to make some movement on the leaderboard for sure. I actually had the trifecta in that race for a couple of dollars and then had some doubles into the next race that I ended up hitting, and so that got me into contention. But it put Tommy well out in front of the field with him cashing for about 20 grand, having bet 1,000 to win on Belle Lenoir, which I think he discussed with you on Wednesday. Just goes to show you that Tommy's the kind of guy that can make a move in one shot, and if he does and he connects, you're in big trouble.
Well, and the other big names, it was a big name weekend, considering what Duke did at Vegas and the Orleans in the Fall Classic, too, with a dominant wire-to-wire performance that left people in awe. So that was going on in Vegas, and the Matisses stamped their name on another big Orleans contest. You stamped your name on Quick, Quick, Quick before you wrapped up last week, Nick. And yesterday, DJ in Kentucky was asking, and he was curious about how you take a horse like that, you know, a middle price long shot, and how you bet it personally, if you could riff on that.
Yeah, so that was a scenario where, you know, those Quick, Quick, Quick was a horse who I liked from early in her two-year-old season, and I'd obviously run her best races in Kentucky, so getting back to a friendlier circuit looked like the right kind of angle. I thought she was drawn well outside the other horses, too. I'm sort of embarrassed that I didn't make more money in the race, and I played it in the contest. I had played some multi-race bets through that on my own and used her with a couple of other horses. I actually had $72 left in the $400 Fall Challenge contest on Saturday, and I bet $72 worth of exact as keying Quick, Quick, Quick over the 3, 7, and 9, and ended up hitting the exact, I think, for $18. I got $900 back. So not a bad return on $72 by any means, but the race came in 11.79. So, you know, looking back on it, there probably should have been a few dollars worth of trifectas playing the 11 just over the 3, 7, and 9, and it kind of taught me to dovetail this with contest play that you... And it's uncharacteristic of me to get overly aggressive early and not really be in position to make a move late. And I told a number of people I liked Quick, 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 which I did. So it was a good pick, and it helped me. I had a couple of dollars on the pick four, so I did okay. But it felt like an opportunity where I probably should have done a little bit better. Horses like that that are mid-range prices, I mean, you have to bet them to win. You can't marry yourself to exotics that put you in position where you don't hit if they end up coming through. So I think you want to play the multis in such a way that you can hit that and be in position to hit something going forward. If you could maximize it with another opinion, and then within the race itself, certainly bet to win. And if there's anybody that you can play underneath an exactas and tries, you do that too.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that, because I suggested that you know, based on your history and particularly BC approaches, that you probably keyed for a triple. So that was my inclination off the top of my head.
Yeah, and you know, it was a matter of with my personal play, just letting the multi-race bets go, and then as far as the contest went, just not having enough money. I mean, if I had had another $80, and I would have played the 11 over the 379 in the try, and probably played the 11 over 379 over a few more horses too to try and hit it for $4 or $5, which obviously would have been very, very nice, and would have put me in position to then hit the QE2, and I hit the last race as it was, so you know I didn't end up finishing in contention, but it was certainly right there for the taking. So it was a good opinion, no doubt about it, and she got a great ride. When I saw her hustled out of the gate like she was, I felt pretty good about the race she was going to run. And you know, it was one of those situations where, look, invariably we all end up in scenarios at the track where we say, oh, we really should have made more money there, but I really should have made more money there.
Well, no, I appreciate it. And any time we get to spend on ticket construction and an approach, that is always the area that people, you know, people feel like they have a good handle on their own handicapping decision making. But then when it comes to structuring wagers, and of course between now and Breeders' Cup, we'll spend plenty of time on that. And that's been a big part of, you know, trying to get an early focus. I had John White the other day to talk about the potential favorites and the short prices in key races, so people can, you know, get some early feel on either standing with or standing against, and you know, particularly when it comes to the multi-race wagers. Bob Ehalt wrote a nice piece at ABR this week about just this topic, about and we say this all the time, when it comes to these big days and these mammoth fields, pick five players, you know, don't forget about pick threes and doubles, and you know, it basically limit your exposure when it comes to the high wire act. And you know, it's so much tougher on Breeders' Cup days to link up winners. So if you shorten up, it gives you that much of a better chance. We'll do plenty of those kinds of discussions. Nick, a couple of thoughts about tomorrow at Belmont. Another one of these showcase cards with the statebreds, and it's a fun set of races as always.
It really is. The weather looks like it's going to be good, which has been an issue, obviously, at this current Belmont meet. And you know, though some of the really top shelf New York breds might be in bigger objectives, these fields are really, really solid. The Empire Classic is a race, I think, where you're going to have around a 5-2 or 3-1 favorite. Pat on the Back is a morning line favorite, and I think that he'll end up going off a little bit favored over Can You Dig It, as they have a rematch off the Evan Shipman. Control Group, who was third in there, is back as well. I think the issue for a horse like Control Group is that the pace in here shapes up to be very, very strong with Control Group and Seafoam. Mr. Buff, Hit It Once More. There's really a lot of speed on paper, and with that elongated run to the turn at Belmont going 1 1/8, there's a very good likelihood, I think, that things heat up. And, you know, if they do, then I think you're sort of going to rely on an off-the-pace horse. Pat on the Back is the likeliest winner, and obviously if we're in a scenario where the pace gets very, very quick. I know he has to improve quite a bit, but I'm going to use Evaluator a little bit too. He's a horse that made a big move to finish second in a couple of 1 1/8 races at Saratoga, and quite honestly, that's not the most ideal trip for a deep one-run closer like him. So this is a scenario where I think he might get a pretty strong setup, and you're going to get every bit of that 15-1 morning line. It's interesting to see Twisted Tom making his first start in the barn of Mike Stidham after two just horrible performances for Chad Brown, coming off a layoff now as a four-year-old, and I wouldn't be betting a whole lot of money on him improving suddenly based on those two races he ran. I think the other horse you want to get to in a pace situation is Can You Dig It, who won the Evan Shipman during a stretch where Jimmy Jerkins was basically unstoppable. So assuming that that's going to be the case again, I think is a little bit risky, but obviously you don't want to be knocked out of any kind of horizontal wager by him. The earlier on the card, and to me one of the more interesting races, is the Mohawk. I always forget these names. For New York bred, the older New York bred males, and it's a Black Tide offering plan rematch. Black Tide now finally having put it all together last time to win in a mile and an eighth. Now he's going a mile and a 16th on the Widener, which really is not nearly as ideal a trip for a speed horse, sort of a runoff speed horse. And the other interesting thing is that you have Mo Maverick in the race. Now, Black Tide is sort of impervious to anybody being anywhere near him early. He doesn't really, or what effect it could have. He doesn't really be, he's not really ever bothered by that. I don't know exactly what Javier Castellano was waiting for on Offering Plan last time. And Offering Plan feels like a horse that, and quite honestly, and with due respect to Javier Castellano, might need a new rider because he's fallen asleep on him a number of times. This horse has no early speed whatsoever. And I think the problem is that Black Tide just puts, he puts him in such a difficult spot by getting so far in front of him that he really needs things to kind of fall apart and come back to him. So the mile and the 16th on the Widener might just be a little bit better for him. I'm not overly excited at taking him at a relatively short price. I've got a price horse for everybody to throw into the pick five and maybe some of the verticals as well. Capitation was way too close to Black Tide last time. He needs to be taken back and allowed to make one run. Maybe the blinkers will calm him down. And I think Johnny Velasquez will learn a little bit about having done that. But he, this is a horse that now in 2018 really has not run a bad race at all and snuck up and nearly pulled off a big upset at 26-1, three starts back against Open Company. And then in the West Point had a horrible trip. So there's a little bit to like there. He might be the kind of horse that you could key in the exacta or maybe the try, even moving him down to the third slot and allowing yourself to hit if he comes in underneath some price horses, because he's going to be every bit of that 15-20-1.
And he should sit beautifully, I mean, behind behind those speeds, too. I mean, it could clear right out for him right away. And Johnny, you know that Johnny's going to be forward, you know, early on and find a good spot. So I it's funny, I put a dollar sign by Tapitation too. Speaking of dollar signs, there's a couple of places where there are horses that you're going to lean on. Probably 55 seems very, very overwhelmingly likely in the Ticonderoga on the anchor leg of that pick five and the early pick four. However, the Hudson, the 6.5 furlong sprint, makes sense of this one, Nick, the fourth.
This one's tough, you know, and you have horses that have dabbled in Open Company now recently that you would want to give an extra look to, but, you know, it's not as if Long Haul Bay is in very good form, and Runaway Lude is coming off a layoff after kind of a breakthrough performance. The horse has always had a great deal of talent, but he missed Saratoga, was entered in the John Morrissey and was scratched in the paddock, and now he drew very, very well and should get a pretty much ideal trip being on the outside. But, boy, he's a tough horse to trust. And you have Gold for the King, who's going to get a lot of support, whose win two back was very dressed up courtesy of a very, very slow pace. That being said, this is a horse who's always performed well in the New York bred ranks. And quite honestly, I mean, and with all due respect to Gary, who did an excellent job with Candid Desire, you got to look at Candid Desire off the claim by Jason Service. You know, this is the kind of claim that he's done exceptionally well with. This is a horse who also doesn't have to drop too far back in a race that maybe doesn't have an overwhelming amount of speed. I didn't know what to do with my boy Tate, who's been really, really, I thought he's been dull since he came back from that lengthy layoff, and wondered in a way if he wasn't a horse that just kind of came to hand in the winter and maybe his form was a little dressed up coming back from that. So I can see myself using 4 or 5 in here very, very easily and trying to just get through there and get to La Moneda and 55, who I'll be surprised if the winner of the Ticonderoga comes from outside of those two. If I had to, you know, gun to my head, who am I using for sure in the Hudson? I would say Runaway Loot, Candid Desire, My Boy Tate, and I Love Lulu, and I'll definitely have Long Haul Bay in there as a backup.
Yeah, I can't argue. It felt like 6 or 7 of them under different scenarios were possible. Speaking of scenarios, the Iroquois looks like there's too much speed lined up, Nick, not to want to look at basically three horses, Holiday Disguise, Highway Star, and Satisfy, who all can come with a late run. But it feels like, you know, there's 4 or 5 horses that are grappling early here.
It feels like a scenario where Rosario is probably going to time it well on Holiday Disguise. This is his bag, I would say. He's, you know, the best off-the-pace rider in the game. But obviously the class relief that Highway Star is getting is a little bit too much to overlook, and it's definitely too much to underrate. So I would imagine it's going to boil down to those two. No great revelation from me giving out the two favorites. Pause for the Cause is improving, but it just feels like she's got to improve a lot to contend with these. They're quite a bit better than her, and I don't really know if she'll necessarily get the best of it pace-wise. I don't know if she won't be hurt by there being a fast pace in front of her. Obviously, she just can't be too close, and being on the inside might be a bit of a problem there. Pico Uno has run races good enough to win, but I'm gonna take the approach that wins like the Dancing Renee and last year's Union Avenue are sort of the exception to the rule, because we've seen her underperform in way too many spots like this to give her much of a look. And last year's Iroquois, she was 8-5 in the face of K-Zone going off at, I believe, less than even money. That was just a complete no-show. So I'm going to take a pass on her and look to see if anybody outside of these two favorites can win. I just don't see it.
Let me jump to the ninth race, because you already talked about the Empire Classic. Give us an Empire Distaff look, because this is one of those creepy races where I've got four different horses that have recent races that are good enough to win. But that doesn't do anything for you. Hayfield, for instance, Bonita Bianca, potentially. Who else in here? Tis Now Smile is a consider, clearly. I don't like this race. We've talked this week about what's going on at Far Hills, and we got the two races the two races that we pair up, and it's the Empire Distaff, the Empire Classic. Give us a ninth race approach.
Yeah, this is one where I guess the question is, are you willing to try some of the three-year-olds against the older horses? Obviously, a horse like Take Charge Aubrey has to improve, but boy, she feels like she's going to get the run of it. And her 2 mile and 16, her last 2 mile and the 16th races at Belmont, her three Belmont races, period, really make you feel like she just excels at Belmont. And I mean, 5-1 is no great shakes, but if she's a little bit north of that, somewhere around 10-1 or so, I mean, I would certainly be willing to take a chance there. It feels like there's a great deal of pace signed up. I'm not sure if Bluegrass Flag is going to go with Weston Hamilton named. I hope she does, because I want to see there be a little bit more pace in here. And then, I think you're going to throw a blanket over a lot of the horses you mentioned. There's Benita Bianca, who's been successful against New York Breds and at longer distances, and English Soul, who beat the aforementioned Take Charge Aubrey last time, Take Charge Aubrey herself, Hayfield, who's probably a little bit more of a one-run sprinter, but is in form that's just way, way too good for you to be overly critical of her. So I'm gonna take the, assuming that Bluegrass Flag goes and that we're going to get a Bluegrass Flag Frosty Ann kind of pace battle, with even Frostwise probably able to get a little bit close to it, I'm going to take the off-the-pace horses, and primarily I'm going to use a combination of the 2, 4, and 12.
Very good. Well, Nick, I know you've got tight timing this morning, and we got a lot done, and I appreciate it. And we'll start to focus in next week. Breeders' Cup dead ahead. Thanks, buddy.
Sounds great, Steve. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro, NTAM 1215. As good as it gets. Let's take a break. And top of the hour upon us, we will visit with Jim Donnelly. Have to think about it, because usually at the top of the hour, it's Nick. And we just had Nick. So we got Jim and then Sean Clancy and James Scully in this hour. Then later, visits from Steve Anderson, Nick Luck, and Mary Rampolini. No Hammer today. He's also flying. He's going to be at Maryland Million tomorrow. And then he heads to Kentucky, because, and he'll be on Monday, probably Monday, to explain the process. We do this every year because it's worthwhile. He'll explain the process that the committee, the Breeders' Cup entry committee, what they go through in terms of putting the fields together. And he'll lay it out, and he'll be at Churchill Monday, Tuesday to do that wrangling. And that sometimes, some years it goes, we always hear about it afterward too. Some years it's very smooth and everything falls into place. Other years, it's like a Texas death match. Back after this, Jim Dunleavy joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.